Guys, today is one of those days where I am just extremely grateful not to be working on Capitol Hill anymore. It is one of those days, and it is not over. There's more fun to come.
Sure.
Okay, Sonny, I know you were on the Trump campaign, had not worked on the Hill. Hogan, you've worked everywhere. Have you worked?
No, I haven't worked on the Hill. No.
I thought I was the only one that's never worked on the Hill.
Let me tell you, this is completely uncharted territory now with Speaker Kevin McCarthy being ousted. So this is something that no one has ever experienced before. No speaker has been removed like this in history, unless I'm mistaken. So anyway, we're going to get all into that with our special guest coming up, because this, after all, is the Line Drive Podcast. And with that, we'll bring in a special guest. We welcome from the city of brotherly love, which is, by the way, my hometown, Chris DeGaulle from the great AM 990 The Answer in Philadelphia, host of the Chris DeGaulle Show. Chris, thank you very much for joining us. Welcome.
Jim, it's a pleasure, and it's great to see you, Sonny. It's great to see you, Hogan. This is fun. Thanks for the invite on a big day.
Christopher, we're so excited to have you. You don't even know. I come on your show. You got the best. You're loud, you're boisterous, all these wonderful things, and now you get to come on this show, and we get to ask you questions. So I'm really excited about it.
Well, I hope I live up to your exacting standards, my friend.
Oh, I think you probably will. Let me add on to what Hogan just said. It's a pleasure to have you with us, and I've loved every time being on your show when I have had the opportunity, and I've also booked a lot of my clients on your show as well. So it's been great, and you truly have one of the best voices in all of radio. No question of that.
Wow, I'm coming here more often.
Yeah,
this is a flatter.
We flatter everybody.
I think you here. Good night.
It's you and Fran Drescher. They're both very soothing, very warm, very inviting. Every time I hear her,
I get into his personal life when he comes on the show. That's why he's mad at me.
That's true too.
You do? What? In what way?
No, let's Hogan. Go on past this. We're here to talk to Chris DeGaulle about the happenings of the day, not ridiculous stuff.
No.
Days gone by.
I mean, maybe as a group, let's talk about today. Whether it's ridiculous or not.
That's true. I'd like a vote.
I've made that determination. All right.
Okay. A lot of connection to Philadelphia by at least three of the four of us.
So here's where I want to start. This is so interesting to me today with the vote of the speaker. Tim, can we start here? Is this okay?
Yeah, go. Yeah.
Vote to vacate the chair. Speaker's gone. He says he's not running again, which blows my mind. I thought he'd come back and be like, hi, I win, and then be even stronger. I've made this point. We can talk about the bickering, and I know we'll go through that. Do the people in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, do they care about this at all?
No. No. And in fact, it's so funny you say that. I tweeted that or posted on X now, I guess we have to say. There are two things that I know to be true. You remember not too terribly long ago when we went through, 15 rounds of voting before Speaker McCarthy became Speaker? And the media told us that this was the biggest, most unprecedented historic thing we'd ever lived through. And I can tell you, beyond a shadow of a doubt, my audience didn't care a whit. It didn't change their lives even a little. They were more than happy to wait it out as long as it took. I think they feel the same way about this tonight.
Can I add in here that this, I've said this a couple of times now, that I have a child, my life, my outlook on life and what I care about has changed significantly. So
that's weird. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
So as I was listening to some of this debate back and forth to Matt Gaetz, to whoever else was speaking, I was sitting there thinking, I don't care. Like, I really do not care that this is happening. Maybe I should. Maybe that makes me bad and not, you know, a patriot for caring about what's going on. But at the end of the day, is whoever is speaker, does that affect how expensive my groceries are that we just paid for tonight? That were outrageous, by the way. Bingo. No, I mean, I don't care.
But you mean you don't see the mobs of people in the street with their placards and signs demanding single subject legislation in Congress? You don't hear the cry from the masses?
The
problem is, as Sonny so beautifully just laid out, when the Republican voter who barely has control of the House by a whisker feels like these men and women aren't really accomplishing much anyway, and then we find out their leader is gone, we say, okay, did we have a leader to begin with? The border is in chaos. Inflation is in chaos. Our major metropolitan cities like Philadelphia are in chaos. Chaos in our public schools. There's chaos all abound. Our country is falling apart. I'll get over the guy in the, you know, $5,000 suit not holding a little wooden gavel. I'll get over it. I'm fine. We've got real chaos to worry about.
Yeah, that's my issue with it is that, you know, with all the stuff that's been going on and the recent polling that's been coming out, and Republicans have the largest lead, if you talk about who do voters trust more on certain issues, on the economy, which, as we've just discussed, is probably the most pressing thing that individual people feel in their daily lives every single day. It's the most important issue out there. The Republicans, according to Gallup, have the largest lead in trust that they've ever had on that issue since Gallup has been polling it since, I think, 1991, something like that. So they got a huge advantage on the economy. The same poll showed incredibly that the people side with the Republicans in the event of a government shutdown. To me, now we do this, which is an enormous distraction. It gets those other things off the front page of the newspaper and off the lead stories in the hour on cable news all over the place. The only winner, in my view, of this whole thing is Joe Biden, because it blows his investigation, the impeachment inquiry off the front burner. The economy takes a backseat. Anything involving Democratic culpability and the shutdown is gone. But this is a huge win for Joe Biden. That's the way I see it.
You know, I defer to Hogan on messaging. I couldn't disagree with that. We're not talking about impeaching a corrupt president. We're not talking about his corrupt son who was in court today. Hell, we're not even talking about Donald Trump. You want to talk about chaos and unprecedented? Donald Trump sitting in a courtroom while that half-wit, half-baked kook of a judge is giggling all the way home. That's unprecedented. Now, that's national chaos if you want a chaotic story, not Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah, I do want to talk about that. Let's hear, before we get off the removal of the speaker, which I think is obviously the news of the day, here, this was Gates laying out the case, Matt Gaetz from Florida, of course.
The thing we have in common, Kevin McCarthy said something to all of us at one point or another that he didn't really mean and never intended to live up to. I don't think voting against Kevin McCarthy is chaos. I think $33 trillion in debt is chaos. I think that facing a $2.2 trillion annual deficit is chaos. I think that not passing single subject spending bills is chaos. I think the fact that we have been governed in this country since the mid-90s by continuing resolution and omnibus is chaos. And the way.
Okay, well, so listen, he's not wrong about any of that stuff.
No.
He just isn't. He's not wrong. I'm just not sure that blowing everything up was exactly the way to go.
It's some of the irony here is too, one of the reasons Republicans are quite concerned about Ukraine funding in perpetuity without any accountability or account of where it's going, how it's being spent, is the fact that Gates and all the Republicans are like, wait a minute, there's no off ramp in Ukraine. There's no strategy to end it, right? To turn the page. And then he does what he does. There's no off-ramp. Like, who's the next speaker going to be? How is this going to go? What are negotiating tactics and tools you're going to use? What are you pushing for to get, to gain? And here's the thing. I get both sides of this because some of the things Gates says, I'm looking at him going, okay, yeah, if you had a punch list and it was agreed upon and he didn't do it, right? He said, I'll do these things if I get your vote and then didn't do it. Okay, that's fine. But it's so much more layered than that because now we're hearing behind the scenes, they had a lot of these things done, but it was Gates and his crew that torpedoed them when no one was looking and then kind of set McCarthy up. It seems as though this was kind of the game plan from day one to hold his feet to the fire. And I'm not saying he shouldn't do it. And I'm not saying McCarthy's the best speaker ever, but there are also political realities that exist where we don't have the House by a few seats. We don't have the Senate and we don't have the White House. Mm-hmm. So I'm just a little concerned that it plays into the narrative of the left that we're chaotic, threat to democracy, all the nonsense. They say it's not true, but the left and the media are going to play it that way. Now, Chris, your audience, I guarantee you, I'm in D.C. If I bumped into people up and down the street, they don't know who the vice president is. They're not going to know who the speaker of the House is.
Yeah, so
that's kind of irrelevant. But at the end of the day, you mentioned all the issues people care about. don't they want a functioning government that at least tries to address those things? And what this does, it seems like it takes those issues off the table. And now we've got to focus on the backbiting and the bickering and negotiating. And by the way, I'm not saying he's not negotiating for good things. I like single issue bills. I think that's a problem in DC, but it still goes back to the people want functionality and solutions. And we, as the Republican Party, say we can offer that because our solutions are America First policies that 80% of the people agree with. But if we're not functioning, we can't make that case. Does that make any sense?
It most certainly does. And how do I answer this? I don't disagree with a word you said. I think people feel, and it's all about feelings, you know, when you're talking about this, I understand, not strategy. It's very similar to Donald Trump. When people say Donald Trump can't win, I think it's the exact same argument in many ways. People say to me, Chris, I love what Trump did, but people hate his guts and they're ticked off and it looks chaotic. And a guy like Ron DeSantis makes better sense. And I will always say, I'll even stipulate that, but here's how I feel. And here's how I feel that we've been getting the backhand of a government that doesn't respect the people it represents. We've got a dysfunctional, chaotic government as it stands now that's harming us, not helping us. So them governing, quite frankly, has done nothing but disappoint, disrupt, and harm us. I think we're a nation, a lot of us, who feel like we've been given the back of the government's hand. We don't like them a lot, so we're angry. And I know that's not a strategy. That may not be sophisticated, but I think that's the way a lot of people feel, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, it's exactly that kind of sentiment that gave rise to Trump in 2015 and 2016 and has carried him all the way through, the idea that people feel like they've been left behind by the government. And I don't know that it's fair to lay that all at Kevin McCarthy's feet here, because in fairness, because we played Matt Gaetz as sort of the prosecutor in the case, here's Jim Jordan, congressman from Ohio, as a defense attorney, if you will.
Ohio is recognized for 3 minutes.
I thank the gentleman for yielding. On January 3rd, we said the 118th Congress is about three things. Pass the bills that need passed. Do the oversight work.
I hate it when that happens. Audio malfunction there. I apologize, guys.
That's the Rick Perry app.
Quickly, if you don't
mind. That's the Rick Perry app.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
And tee that up if you want, Tim, because I'd just like to ask the room, any of you, this is a sincere question. You may know Matt Gaetz. I have no relationship with him. I've never interviewed him before. People like Newt Gingrich and Mark Levin have been suggesting that he's a double agent. I mean, they've really been hammering him. So I don't know what to make of him. I assume you guys have dealt with him before. What are we to make of the sincerity here?
You know, look, at those images of him surrounded by all the media on the Capitol steps from last night. I mean, to me, somebody asked me, I think it was your producer, Eddie, who asked me, you know, what's his plan for all of this? And I texted him back that picture of Matt Gaetz surrounded by every reporter on Capitol Hill. And I said, this was his plan.
Yeah.
I mean, because he doesn't know what comes next, you know, and I don't know how fair it is to lay it at Kevin McCarthy's feet. Let's think about this. If you look at Nancy Pelosi was speaker twice, right? And we know that she just ruled with an iron fist and she kept her caucus in line no matter what. They had caucus discipline all the time, 100% of the time. If anyone ever strayed on a particular vote, it's because they had permission to stray. And now look at, we have three speakers in a row, Republican speakers in a row. Boehner, despised by the base. And, you know, obviously he was no longer a speaker. Paul Ryan, despised by the base, again, a former speaker. And now we have Kevin McCarthy, first speaker ever booted. I mean, being speaker, I just don't know that it is possible with the Republican conference the way it is, and with how vocal the most conservative members are, and with a narrow majority as they had, I just don't think it's possible to be a speaker and last very long if you're a Republican, because they're just going to get fed up with you.
Why? I'm sorry, please, Sonny.
I was just going to say, I have one more point that I would like to make. We kind of touched on this a little bit about this whole thing is really distracting from what's actually going on right now. And I was seeing earlier on Yahoo News, I believe it was, there are already hit pieces coming out against potential new speakers. I believe this one was against Steve Scalise. And it just goes to show that, I don't know, I'm sure, let me backtrack. Matt Gaetz might have had good intentions in doing this. And yes, you know, I'm all for getting the swamp out and establishment, but it's really taking away from what's going on right now, because no one's talking about really President Trump's trial that's happening, and no one's talking about the core issues that we're facing.
Chris, well, what you had a thought there.
Yeah, I think, well, that's exactly right. There are a lot of things that we ought to be talking about instead of this, for sure. I am really intrigued about those who make up the Freedom Caucus. You know, Fred Keller is a guy that we have on the show every, at least a couple of times a week, the chair of the House Freedom Caucus. And it seems to me that most of the people that make up the House Freedom Caucus are always considered the malcontents, the wackadoos. I never hear the members of Congress that conservatives, those that listen to talk radio, really like and feel inspired by. They're always maligned, all of them, the whole pack of them. You couldn't pick a one that media and most people say isn't out there fringe, kooky. And the Republican Party keeps putting up the guy or the woman that is the more moderate pick, the one that can bring home the, you know, the moderate southeastern Pennsylvania vote or whatever. And I don't know what the Republican Party is going to do about that. But if they keep insisting on projecting this, we can't go with the wackos, we've got to go with someone more sensible, they're never going to bring we wackos home.
Yeah, well, it's difficult, you know. I mean, it's difficult. We do have. The media doesn't portray it this way, but the Republican Party and the conference is actually very, I believe, very diverse as far as the range of opinions go, and the range of how conservative to how, you know, less conservative, or even there aren't too many moderates, but you know, it's a wide span. It's hard, I think, to find a single leader who pleases everybody on the day that he or she is elected speaker, and then can continue to please everybody long enough to keep, especially when you have a majority of, you know,
but
five.
To your point, and it's cliched, but to your point, Tim, there is never the discussion of a moderate Democrat, because there is no such thing. There's no one's less moderate than Nancy Pelosi. Right.
They were talking today about how, you know, are there any moderate Democrats going to volunteer to, not show up or not? Like, who are you talking about?
Yeah. What? Also, guys, understand, liberals move in monoliths because they are one universal collective, by their nature, conglomerate of one thought, right?
The Borg. You're describing the Borg.
Republicans are, by our nature, more individualistic. But politics is a team sport. And so if you're going to succeed, you got to work to bring those people together. So of course, Pelosi's going to have it easy because she's going to get everyone in line because they refuse to go against it. They move together. And of course, the mouthpieces of the media and big tech and Hollywood, colleges, universities, they all kind of push the same themes. What I found interesting in this back and forth debate on this issue today in the House, I got to tell you, just listening to the messages, Gaetz's message was about the dysfunctionality and the rules and the agreements they made to try and simplify these things for the people and do a better job. The pro-McCarthy argument was, he's a good guy, he raises a lot of money, he's done a lot of good things. It wasn't, Gaetz was pinpointed. McCarthy's people were more broad in generalities. I'm not saying that's wrong on either side. I'm trying to point to, when we had this fight initially, as we've talked about, the concessions that the Republicans got, the Gaetz wing got from McCarthy, we all said, okay, look, what I understand is every single time there's a budget fight, every time, they govern right up to midnight, and then they force all the people on the right to jettison their beliefs and their politics and go, okay, we don't want to do a shutdown, we don't want to get blamed, so we'll vote the way you want us to vote. And to his credit, Gaetz and everybody else said, if McCarthy's going to be the speaker, no, we're not doing that anymore. And McCarthy said, okay, I'm with you. And here we are with CRs and pushing things down the road. And I'm like, all right, I'm not saying that's not the best thing we could have gotten because of the dynamics that exist in the House and because of what exists in the Senate and the White House. I'm just saying, I kind of get both sides here. McCarthy may not have been doing everything he said he was going to do. At the same time, what's your plan, Matt Gaetz? Where are you going to take us in this fight? So you see, I'm kind of torn here going, all right, both sides have legitimate points. But at the end of the day, the nuance of this, the personal and professional arguments Matt Gaetz and McCarthy have, notwithstanding, the people here need some action and they need some cohesiveness and collective movement. Had we passed that spending bill last week that cut 8% across the board, no funding for Ukraine and funding for border control, border measures, you'd have put the Democrats in a weird spot because the Senate would have said, no, we're not taking that up. And then you would have said, all right, wait, you're going to shut down this government because of Ukraine funding, not American. I mean, it kind of writes itself. And the public at that point, a majority of whom said it was the Democrats' fault, I think you kind of gave a card back here or a couple of cards. It just doesn't seem, something's wrong. Something's not adding up here for me.
Yeah, I think those people. Those arguments do carry water for me. I think I was looking at it, and I tend to look at it from a macro political perspective because I'm a campaign guy.
Yeah,
and so like we've been talking, it pushes all these other things off to the side for now because this gives, there's nothing that the media and of course Democrats, you know, lump them all together. There's nothing they like better than Republican on Republican violence,
oh,
right?
Sure.
And that's what we're giving them once again, giving them the opportunity to write about that instead of all the other stuff that is, I think, much more newsworthy, like, for example, that the guy who was president of the United States was absolutely for sale and has enriched him, his entire family. You mentioned it there, Hogan. I think a large issue in this entire rift, a really, really deep rift, I think, is the issue of funding for Ukraine. It's not where the Republican Party, the majority of the Republican Party is. It's not where the majority of Americans are. Funding endlessly this war in Ukraine. I think that's a really big sticking point for this whole thing.
Couldn't agree more. Ukraine is and Hogan and I have talked about this before, just in terms of messaging. I don't know that I've ever heard, to my memory, any president ever say that we will continue to fund an effort for as long as it takes, as much as it takes. I've never heard that, and they say it over and over and over like they're poking us in the chest. Not only are we going to fund it, we're going to endlessly fund it and not tell you a thing more than we're just going to keep sending money. And I don't know about you, but it feels almost antagonistic at this point when they send
that. I got into an argument with someone on TV about this, and I made the point we should have people back channeling this to solve the issue between Russia and Ukraine. And they laughed at me and said, you think we should lower ourselves? I said, we're paying for it. It's our money. Yeah. You don't send your kid to college and have no say in it. You're going to make sure those dollars are correctly.
Are you sure about that?
Okay. I don't know. Maybe. But you see my point. You're telling me we're going to keep giving these people money and we don't have any stake in the outcome? It's ridiculous to think.
Or goals. That. Yeah.
Yeah. And the way that they, like you were saying, Chris, the way they poke you in the chest and say, you know, we're going to keep doing this. We're going to spend the money until we don't need to spend it anymore. They say it as though they do have the backing of the majority of Americans. They say it as though the country is behind this. And it's not. The people of the United States are not behind an endless blank check and just dumping money into a war that they don't understand. Like most wars that we have seen over the last several decades, they've mostly been televised wars. People can keep up with what's going on. There is no coverage, none of what's going on.
You know where there is coverage, guys, and you know this well. I mean, it's gotten so bad that the governor of New York, Kathy Hochul, is saying we've got to do something about our own border.
Right.
That's insane. Right.
I know.
Anyone seen the videos? I don't know if they're real or not, of in Ukraine people having parties and have y'all seen this? Are those real?
I don't know.
No,
I don't know either, but you're right. There is hardly no coverage of the Ukraine war.
And I was walking, I happened to tour Congress just last week. I'd never done it before. So a friend of mine took me on a tour of the Capitol building just this past weekend and showed me, and I know you've seen it, the old Senate chambers. And I just thought it kind of notable and I tucked it away. And this just kind of resurrected in my brain as we're talking. When Zelensky came to address members of Congress last week, that's where he spoke. Did you know that?
Hmm.
He spoke in the old Senate chambers. So, even him visiting is kind of done sort of off to the side, sort of in secret. They won't quite treat him like a real head of state addressing Congress jointly. It's just weird.
It was before, what you're telling what you're saying though, because it was before. Remember, it was a big deal. People wearing Ukraine flags in the House chamber, for heaven's sake. So now they've kind of decided to sweep it under the rug. Bottom line here for the box here, Sonny, Tim, Chris, in 2024, does this matter? Like, by the time we get to the election, is this going to be a big thing, or will we have gone past this and no one's
Gonna I mean, think about it. Like it's discussed before, the 15 votes that it took for McCarthy to become speaker, you know, the media, which these Capitol Hill reporters, I used to work around these people every day, and this is their lives. They think that because they work in Capitol Hill, they're so immersed in it. If you look at the Twitter feed of these people, it's good. It's a good source of information if that's what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. But man, oh man, to be obsessed with such arcane details and things. I mean, my God, what do you, and then, you know what they do after work? They go to across the street to Bullfeathers and sit around for three more hours and talk about it some more. That's what they do. Yeah. And so, you know, that stuff, they thought that the 15 votes for McCarthy was going to be a stain on his speakership and all that stuff. And it was forgotten by the American people inside of 30 seconds. No one cared. You know what it meant for the fact that it took 15 votes for him to become speaker? Do you know what that meant? It meant that he was speaker. That's it.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's all it meant. And so, you know, who knows what, I don't know how long it's going to take for them to replace him and come to some agreement. It's not going to be McCarthy, obviously, but you know, this page will turn, but there just didn't need to be this diversion, you know, blowing stuff up for the sake of blowing stuff up. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure that a lot of this stuff is fixable. I really don't. Yeah. In a perfect world, all the things that Matt Gaetz said would stop happening, right? Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I just don't know how you find the wizard.
There's such a mistrust. I'm not revolutionizing anything when I say this, but it's what's disheartening and sad is that I know most of my audience and most GOP voters are now reduced to just wincing and saying, "Well, okay, Republican," and they vote, and because they just feel out of sheer desperation they've got no other option, but they have zero attachment. They don't feel like the party itself has any direction. They're unhappy with Rana. They're unhappy with McCarthy. They feel rudderless. They don't feel like they have an advocate.
They love us.
Mm-hmm. They have you, Chris.
Yeah, well, that's why you, Chris.
That's why that's him. My checks keep clearing.
And that's what matters. So that's I guess the last time the party, maybe that is coming back. The last time I think that most Republicans felt like they had a rudder, it was when Donald Trump was president. Of course, he's running again and he's in court again. This civil trial in New York, where the judge, I love how this whole thing has been set up. It's pretty amazing. The judge has already ruled that he is guilty of fraud for having inflated the value of his properties in order to obtain bank loans. And then, of course, that includes valuing Mar-a-Lago for as low as $18 million, which is I'm not a real estate expert, but I can tell you that that's laughable on its face. That for that place to be worth $18 million is a joke. But then basically what they're doing is saying that he borrowed money from banks because of this on the back of this inflated estimation of the value of all of his stuff. So he borrowed that money, he then paid it back with interests. So the banks actually were not defrauded. They actually made money because they got their loan paid back with interest. There is in fact no victim of this alleged crime. No one got defrauded. So what's the deal, Chris? What do you make of any of this?
Yeah, you'd think if there was going to be a court action, it would be brought by the banks. No bank sued the Trump organization. So if they're not unhappy, then who should be unhappy? Now, let's go from somebody that the Republican electorate doesn't care anything about, Kevin McCarthy, to a man that the Republican electorate watches and seethes with white hot rage at the way a system is being turned and weaponized against him. And I find it interesting. And again, I go back to you guys as campaign and communications experts. I had a legal guy on today from Landmark Legal, and I asked him, and he said he wasn't entirely sure, but he didn't think Trump had to be sitting in that courtroom today if he didn't want to be there, which told me he wanted to be there, which tells me as an artist in communication, he knew the importance of sitting in that room. Can you speak to that?
It's 100% accurate. So he wasn't supposed to be there and decided he wanted to go. And when he did, he commanded the cameras. The oxygen was gone out of the room. He made his point. And if you notice when he sat down, it was the same stoic expression he had in that mugshot. Okay. Yes. So he knows what he's doing. He gets the pageantry of it, if you will. He got to push public opinion and did so in a good way, because at the same time, you have Letitia James behind him, right? Who, by the way, I saw a clip of her today saying we're going to get Donald Trump that illegitimate president. So she's an election denier. Let's get that out in the open. First things first. But
people need to be aware of that. Time.
Did you see that goofy judge when that camera went on him and he did a double take? Now, he let the cameras in the room in the first place. He did a double take. Takes his glasses off, smiles at the camera, then looks at the audience and shrugs like it was an intro to some 80s sitcom. It was so bad and so stupid. Then I see all these memes coming out and they're playing like intros to Full House or The Office. It was perfect. But Chris, 2 points. You made a good observation. The bank is the one who should be bringing this forward, but the bank wasn't defrauded, so there's not an issue there. Second is, I have been to Mar-a-Lago, I cannot tell you how many times. Not a weird flex. It's because I worked for the president, and that's where we stayed in the winter. So I was there a bunch. I've been around Palm Beach for a long time, dealing with different things in my current capacity and my previous life. There are vacant lots there for $50 million. There are single bedroom or single family homes for $70 million. This is Mar-a-Lago. It is a sprawling estate with multiple rooms for multiple guests, like 30, 40, 50, beachfront property, tennis courts, putting green, croquet greens, like $18 million. The judge just decides this. It's absolutely insane. And I'm glad the president, now he went back today too, so he's trying to rekindle that fire. I think at some point he probably doesn't need to go back. But right now, he's making a good play politically and with public opinion.
You know, I think that video that you're talking about of the judge acting goofy there and mugging for the camera and all that, I think it's Donald Trump's presence in the courtroom that created that judge's reaction, because he's like, oh, me? Hey, look at me. You know, and so he had this weird reaction, I think, and it was influenced by the fact that Trump is sitting right there in front of him. And so I think that the president's decision to go is already paid off, because that piece of tape, I think, undercuts the judge's credibility, as you just described it. So for that thing to be bouncing all around social media and getting millions and millions and millions of views, it helps the president's case, I think, at least in public opinion.
Are the Trump children, all three, involved in this as well? Or just a couple or one? Do you guys know?
I think the sons are.
I know Eric is.
Yeah, Eric.
Businesses, yeah. Ivanka, I don't believe is, but she may. I'm not sure.
I ask only because, you know, Ivanka is, both Ivanka and Melania are two characters that I think are sort of the nuclear card that whenever they're played, I don't know when they'll be played. They're like submarines. And I think eventually at some point, those two will launch. I don't know when, but I think it'll be powerful when they do.
I hope so.
I don't know, but did y'all see this kind of off subject? There were articles going around about Melania renegotiating her post-nuptials and all of that. And all the headlines make it seem like, oh my gosh, they're headed for divorce anytime now. But after reading it, it's really more about Barron. And I know we talk about this on the show all the time, but the way the media covers this man is just so unfair. It's absolutely insane. You cannot trust a single thing that you read. This is why, honestly, I barely even check the news. I go on Twitter, honestly, to try to get the most unfiltered things as to what's going on. But Hogan, I think I saw that he said he was going back tomorrow.
So I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is. You know, it's the ratings, I'm sure. Yeah. But, you know, at some point, I think he should probably step away and let that thing get going. But it does give him the opportunity to make his case to the people without the filter of the mainstream media, which is why they hated him in the first place. He used Twitter to his advantage in that way, and he can communicate to every to every plumber, to every school teacher, to every construction worker, to every office holder, just with the stroke of a keyboard. And it takes power away from those who've spent decades building that power. They want to grow it. They want to maintain it. And for him to kind of undercut that, and he's doing so by going to the courtroom, that's one reason they hate him so much.
Yeah. And it looks, and to the voters, it looks like institutionalized weaponization against a man who represents so many millions who feel the system's working against them too. Yes. He's the hood ornament for the oppressed in this country.
Yeah. And as, especially once people understand that, you know, actually he paid back those loans and the banks made money and the banks didn't complain. And then the, you know, a normal person will go, so, okay, so where's the crime? You know, I don't really understand it. Chris, tell me,
comes along and
what were you, your listeners be talking about the next 3 days left in this week as we tape here on Tuesday night? What do you think?
I haven't any doubt it'll largely be this. You know, in Pennsylvania, there's a very interesting couple of, well, there's a few. Pennsylvania's been producing some real freak shows lately. I call them the Addams Family, actually. You know, Pennsylvania is where you, you're welcome. Dr. Rachel Levine.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania gave you John Fetterman. You're welcome.
Also, oh, thank you.
That's also a good one.
Easiest Halloween costume on the planet.
So true, Hogan.
I tweeted that, too. Put on some Crocs, put on some cargo shorts and a hoodie, and you are a United States
senator. Does he wear Crocs? Does he wear Crocs, too?
Whatever.
Yeah,
no, I know he doesn't care. My goodness.
I will say this, though. Keep your eyes on somebody who is the Marilyn. Is it Marilyn? She's the pretty monster. Yeah.
Yes.
That's a reference that predates
me. I get it. I get it. But the Munsters thought that Marilyn was the ugly one.
That's right. But the one that you should keep a sharp eye on is the governor of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro. This guy is the wunderkind of the Democrat Party, and he fancies himself the next president of the United States. I don't know when he gets there, but he has been, since he was a Montgomery County, Pennsylvania commissioner, he has been dreaming, humming, hail to the chief. And this guy, I just saw him this weekend at an Atlantic party at the Wharf in D.C. with Nancy Pelosi. So I'm sure he's spending more time in D.C. than he is in Pennsylvania. You know, he's the first to run to the front of the line every time an escaped murderer is caught or a bridge in 95 collapses. He's there to wave and smile. The guy's sharp. He wants the job. I don't know when, but mark my words and keep a sharp eye on the governor of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro. He wants the gig.
Did he? I thought I was under the impression that he had personally rebuilt I-95 by himself.
He is too. Yeah, he showed up at the Phillies game waving, taking credit like he did something. It was remarkable.
Biden saw it collapse. He was there in person.
Yeah, that's right. All those things.
And thankfully, he wasn't driving his 18-wheeler rig across it or doing one of his millionth miles on his Amtrak under it.
Now, of course, what Josh and Biden won't talk about is they love to talk about Philadelphia and being in Pennsylvania. They won't talk about the fact that marauding bands of goons are looting and killing and breaking almost every single night. I mean, Philadelphia is descending into a state of chaos I've yet to see. Every day seems to reach a new level of depravity that surprises me. And that's not just Philadelphia, but most major cities across the country. They're on.
Can you handicap the Senate race?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. How do you feel about Dave McCormick has entered the race against Bob Casey Jr.? What do you think?
Well, I know this. The Pennsylvania GOP has said they're not going to screw around this time. They stayed out of it the last time, and then we had the hot three-way mess in Kathy Barnett, Dr. Oz, and Dave McCormick. So this time, when McCormick said he's in, the Pennsylvania GOP said, "And we're with you." So they didn't wait this time. They threw it all in with McCormick. I like the guy. I'm good friends with the guy that'll be running his campaign effectively. Full disclosure, but I've always liked McCormick. He's what I liked and admired about McCormick, and you guys can appreciate this. Candidates like Trump who like coming on shows like ours and talking to the people, taking the questions, answering the tough questions, being challenged. They don't mind it. They're not afraid to answer questions about their record or their past when they're attacked by primary opponents. Some hide, some come on the show. McCormick is consistently available and accessible. Sean Parnell loves him. I mean, he's a military hero. So, no, I'm very positive about him. I mean, Bob Casey's a tough name to beat, as you well know, in Pennsylvania. But McCormick's got a great shot, I think.
I think a lot of people still think that they're voting for Casey's dad. Still,
they do.
That's probably right.
Yeah, pro-life blue dog Democrat. That's long gone. Goodbye.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So neighboring, don't forget, just across the way, I also have New Jersey Garden Staters in my audience. We're having fun with Bob Menendez and his gold bars. It's been
there's another thing that's just pushed out of the headlines because of this McCarthy business. Let's talk. Can we talk about Senator Menendez a little bit longer, please?
It's a mess. It's a mess here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, my friends.
Yeah. So what do you, don't get many Eagles calls. They have other radio stations in Philadelphia that handle football talk. But speaking of handicapping, Eagles sit at four. I'm a huge lifelong Eagles fan, Chris. I went to Temple University, by the way, in Philadelphia. So it pains me for these roving, marauding bands of criminals that you see. But the Eagles are a bright spot, 4-0. What do you think?
Yeah, and the Phillies are in the postseason, too.
And the Phillies start playoffs, yes, this week.
Red October. No, it's a good time to be a Philadelphia sports fan. That's about one thing you can celebrate. They look great. They've got the toughest part of their schedule still to come. We have Ray Didinger, who's the he's a Hall of Fame.
Oh, yes, legendary sports writer, yeah.
And Ray says on paper they are he says it's them and the 49ers. He believes are the teams to beat this year.
And my man, A.J. Brown, played at Ole Miss.
He's unbelievable.
One of the best. He is a freak.
He's glad. A monster, man. He is not
so good. He and DK Metcalf were on either side. If you think about that, DK, obviously an all-star receiver in Seattle, also huge. And these two guys were specimens in college. They were unguardable. And I think it's pretty much the same way in the pros. I watched some of that game on I was on a flight. I gave a speech in St. Louis on Saturday, flew back on Sunday. And so I got a chance to watch the game in flight. And Eagles just look great. I mean,
In full disclosure, I'm a Chiefs fan, and you know what we have going on there.
I do.
See, Sonny, I was going to have to say, Sonny, by the way, this is a football conversation, but now
Sonny's well all done. In now.
See how I brought her home?
That was really good.
That was good. I can get in on this conversation.
So, actually, are you a Swiftie? Are you a Swiftie or no?
Well, I used to be probably the biggest Taylor Swift fan on the face of this planet, but now that she's so crazy, I don't know. Or maybe now that I'm married and not having boy trouble, I just can't relate quite as much anymore. So, but yeah, I've seen more Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. Oh,
see?
I don't know what that was. I know. Yeah. It was my dog.
I don't know. I think Taylor Swift is a distraction, but I don't mind if it's the Chiefs getting distracted. Sorry, Chris.
But do you like her music, Tim?
I'm familiar. Shake It Off is a song that I know.
That's a good one.
Also a Pennsylvanian, She comes from Berks County.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know
that. I've seen the videos of the girls kind of trolling their boyfriends, being like,
"Yes,
hey, no one ever even heard of Travis Kelce until Taylor Swift." And the guy's like, wait, no. Like, what are you talking about? He won two Super Bowls. Like, they're screaming. And the girls are like, no, I don't think so. I don't think anyone's ever heard of the guy.
Those are good.
I saw a picture of a girl showing up, like going through the security at Arrowhead Stadium wearing a Kelce jersey, and it was spelled K-E-L-S-E-Y, Kelce.
That's right.
Which is not how you spell it.
Just with an E, no Y. I mean, the Chiefs played against a miserable Bears team. And then when we found out that she was in the stands, they had the highest rated NFL broadcast that Sunday. I don't know what Sunday night looked like. I haven't seen those numbers, but she's bringing in viewers. Roger Goodell is laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah. Oh, NBC News put out a tweet live, live update. Taylor Swift has arrived at the game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like,
who cares?
Like the movements of the Pope or something being reported.
And all she's doing is sitting there. It's not even like she's singing or doing it.
I think I
took my 15-year-old daughter to Arrowhead to see her this summer. My 15-year-old daughter and her cousin, two 15-year-old girls, they just love her. They love her. It's not politics. It's nothing else. They just love the woman.
Yeah.
And I said, this was a very unpopular opinion, but I said, I think Republicans would do well to just bite their tongues and let sleeping dogs lie rather than attack Swifties.
You're way off. We got Kid Rock and Ted Nugent.
What more could we need?
Taylor Swift.
Ted Nugent. Yes. Ted Nugent. That is excellent. Well, listen, Chris, you've been very generous with your
Thanks
time.
Thanks so much, man.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and I have to get up at, you have to get up at oh dark 30 to do what you do tomorrow. And we really very much appreciate it. And where can folks tell me a little bit about where folks can find out more about you and your show on 990 The Answer. What is the Harumph Society?
It is my newsletter on Substack. I do it 3 times a week. And we're having a blast with that. That's grown by leaps and bounds. We're celebrating 1 year here at the end of the month. So yeah, I hope you'll check that out. That's linked at my website, chrisstigall.com. And we got the podcast of the show every day. So if you want to listen to the podcast version of what we do, you can go to chrisstigall.com and catch it there.
Right. Fantastic. Well, thank you for your time, and we hope to talk to you again soon. Always appreciate it.
And at least two of these three are somewhat regulars on the show. And Sonny, we can make that happen. I think you know somebody if you want to
add me in. I do.
That would be fantastic. Chris DeGaulle, I'm Tim Murtaugh, Sonny Joy Nelson, and Hogan Gidley. Thank you guys for being with us, because this has been the Line Drive Podcast.